So would anyone like to share anything from the last 3 days? Any thoughts, feelings, since we are all leaving now? Reflections, questions?
Online, when I listen to your satsang, I feel like listening. But when it comes to meet you, no? Physically, I just want to shy away, I'm uncomfortable like that, it feels.
Online, you're comfortable?
Yes, but I don't know why I resist, I just want to go behind, not to be seen, like that I feel. But years together, I'll be waiting.
Not to be seen. Have you thought why that might be? Do you feel unworthy of being seen?
I don't know, just like a sort of, I'm uncomfortable. I feel like being alone, just listen, just avoid talking to you. I have to make myself mind, no, I'm not doing this time. I don't know, some ego, I don't know.
Not
whatever
at all.
It is, I don't want to feel that.
Not at all. What is the harm in not wanting to talk? Where's the problem?
Not wanting to talk, not in the sense I want to avoid you. From far it's fine, but not near. Like that I feel.
Good from far, far from good. Is that it?
I didn't understand.
There's no problem. If you feel like avoiding anything, avoid it. Where's the problem? There's nothing wrong with it. Forget over-analyzing it. Why do I want to avoid? What must it be? Forget it. Is it worth it? But there is one difference. There are people in one's life one try to avoid because they make one uncomfortable. Or maybe that personality is not one's preference to be with. So we avoid such people. The dilemma you have is if you are drawn to these talks on Zoom, but not physically. Because to avoid me physically, but be drawn to the talks is a contradiction. Then you would not be drawn to the talks. You may be bored to be with me physically. The talks are far more entertaining, I'm at home, I can listen, aram se, no one is watching me, and so on. But you would not want to avoid. Either way, it doesn't matter. In this living dream of life, why lose your peace over this problem? This is what is happening. The people who used to come for satsang in the pre-pandemic period feel exactly the opposite. They say, we want to avoid your Zoom satsangs and we want to come back to your home. Different strokes for different folks. Anything else?
But the physical presence of the master is important, no? If it is only for online.
It depends. I don't know. In my experience, it was necessary. My transformation could not have happened without the physical presence of three people in my life. One, my mother, because at the time of her awakening, I was there in the same house as her son and was part of the whole process she went through, as well as who she was before the awakening and after. Because never once has my mother raised her voice in my 51 years. So I realized that this is rare when people started telling me that. I thought it was the norm for all mothers when I was young. So that was the first physical presence. The second was Eckhart Tolle, the author, who was a catalyst for me. It is only when I reflect back at my first meeting, physical meeting with him in November 1999, when there was no satsang. I just sat in a room for an hour with him and talked nonsense with him. We both talked nonsense because we had no agenda. I had not read his book. I was not really on the spiritual path. We spoke about Hong Kong. We spoke about the people in Hong Kong, the shopping energy in Hong Kong, mundane stuff, so to speak. But when I look back, 20 years ago that meeting took place, I realized a transmission has happened. Because when I walked out of that room and my sister asked me, how was it? And I said, pretty much the usual chatter with a bloke. But the attention, the respect, the silence in that room and honoring whatever we spoke about without judging it. That stayed in my mind. And thereafter, I was blessed that we had holidays with him, wherever he would give talks. For 2-3 days after the talks, my sister's small group, I would be a pylon. And we would walk in, whether it was UK, whether it was Canada. We would spend time together. He was not fond of talking at all. So it was generally walks in nature with him, with nothing to talk about. And I remember I was very fond of medieval Europe. So when we went to Glastonbury, I looked up the net and found a tour guide who would take us to the ancient ruins, churches. It was fascinating for me. And something very unusual happened, which is interesting. For 2 weeks before my trip to Glastonbury, in my dreams and when I woke up, I would hear the name Pendragon. Pendragon, which was completely a name not known to me. And so I looked up the internet, found out what it meant. When I was in Glastonbury, we went to the ruins of the most ancient church there. And we stood at a grave. And the tour guide said, you have come to the most sacred site in Glastonbury. And this is the grave of King Arthur Pendragon. Now, this was important for me, not because of King Arthur, because it showed to me that this trip was destined to happen. That was the thing. Not that I'm special, I got this in the dream, none of that. And it was on this trip that when I told Eckhart, I found a tour guide who will take us to all these sites and places. And he looked at me with disappointment. He said, I'm tired of names and places and centuries and eras, but I have an option for you. Say no to the guide and let me be the tour guide. And from King Arthur's grave up to the Glastonbury Tor, you come across something called the Chalice Wells, the springs, all in the lore of Glastonbury. The climb up the Glastonbury Tor, which if you look on the net is like a shivling, and the Archangel Michael Tower on the top, which is supposedly the gateway for souls to go to the other world. He didn't say a word. And when we were up, he said, how did you like the tour? So, number two was transmission through presence, which was very clear. had happened. If I had read his book, which the world has read, I don't think it would have happened for me the way other people have been impacted. Transmission number 3, when I met my teacher, I didn't feel he was my teacher, because I felt what he was saying was so obvious that it's ridiculous that people go to listen to all this. That was my honest view. But the second Sunday, when I went to him, and I only bowed down and touched his feet because others were doing it, no other reason. But when I got up and he knocked me on the head and he said, "Is this your second Sunday?" I said, "Yes." "You came last Sunday?" "Yes." He said, "Be very careful. This will become your Sunday church." And I said, "What does this man mean? I'm really not interested in what he says." And I went for 9 years till he passed on, including the day he passed on, which was a Sunday. I must have reached 4 minutes after he passed away, because his brother called me and said, "My brother has gone." Now, in my case, if I had read books of Ramesh, Eckhart, my mother, it would not have happened. So when Ramesh mentioned in his talks that his awakening happened through Nisargadatta Maharaj, and for him also it was necessary, then yes, the physical presence is necessary. But it is case to case. For other people, it may not be necessary. Let's say a devotee of Ramana Maharshi or the mother of Pondicherry. It may not be necessary. But Osho was quite right. I mentioned this to somebody, I don't know who. You see, the ego does not break with a guru who is no longer in the body. This is Osho saying it, not me. Because when the ego surrenders and bows down to another form, what is actually happening is the bowing down is not happening to a form. It is happening to consciousness. But the pride of the ego, according to Osho, the final break of the coconut happens in that surrender, which is what Shirdi Sai Baba said. Also, he was very clear that a living guru is required for a genuine surrender. So, it is for one to decide, do I need a physical guru? Maybe I don't need. That is a decision. For me, I was averse to the word guru because of all the baggage it had, the conditioning, the Indian conditioning. But then I started reading definitions of guru. Giver of light, remover of ignorance. The most accurate definition of guru, you'll be surprised. It means heavy in terms of spiritual weight. So I found by and by that over those Sundays, I was drawn to not only so many masters, but my paths crossed theirs, yogis, masters, psychics. But I felt truly the one quality which seems to be missing in depth is peace of mind in daily living. I kept going back to Ramesh because I felt, you know, this man is so simple, kurta, pajama, grandfather, living room is his ashram, that we miss it. There are no Rudrakshmalas, there's no pomp and show. The average 30 to 50 people in the living room. So I felt that isn't life just about this, what he's saying? First I thought peace of mind was too boring. Everyone can get peace of mind. But he kept hammering that. One very revered and famous monk came from Thailand. very big name, even today he is known. He came with his disciple, sat in front of Ramesh, and the disciple introduced the monk, so and so. And you know, in their tradition, they have to all the time bow down to their master and all that. And Ramesh told him, is there really a need for this? For my satsang, do you need to bring your disciple and he has to do all this to you? And that monk flared up. Nisargadatta would never have said that. I've met Nisargadatta. You are so dogmatic. You are this, you are that. And I said, is this worth being a monk? You lose your peace in 1 second. So I kept seeing this, that this peace of mind he was talking about, isn't it the most precious thing? Then I read Ramana Maharshi. I loved all his books. Guru Vachaka Kovai, talks with Ramana Maharshi, this book, that book, letters, day by day with Bhagwan. Self-inquiry was not for me. But the second option of his, surrender. If self-inquiry is not for you, surrender everything. I felt that was happening naturally. But this was not, this puzzle was not getting solved for me. Is there something more than peace of mind? Whom to ask? Do I trust this man called Ramesh Balsekar enough, or is there something more? And by God's grace, the day that question came, I reopened. I have a habit of reopening books which I like, because I underline things which impact me. 2 years ago, when the pandemic began, Ramana Kendra, Delhi, called me saying, please give a talk because our people on our list are quite agitated with what's happening and all that, and we'd like you to speak to them. And I told him, I said, Adarshji, I only speak about peace of mind in daily living. I am not a Ramana expert. There are others who are. But I can speak about what of his has impacted me. He said, no problem. So I reopened talks with Ramana Maharshi and I found I had double underlined one sentence of Bhagwan's. The state of equanimity is the state of bliss, full stop. So then this line had impacted me when? At that time I realized that's why I was drawn to Ramesh, because he only delivered peace of mind in daily living. So, for me, physical presence was absolutely necessary. For others, it may not be. We don't know. For Bhagwan, it was absolutely necessary in what way? The guru was his, the hill was his guru. He didn't move from the hill. In other words, he didn't move from his guru. Otherwise, he would not have come to Thiruvannamalai. He was drawn by the hill. So some people actually say Ramana had no guru. I said, what are you talking? He had a mountain of a guru. Oh no, we mean physical guru. Question is, did Bhagwan have a guru? In physical form, the answer to me is very obviously yes, but not a person. Then, in the pre-internet days, Nisargadatta Maharaj was asked, since he was in the pre-internet days, is there any benefit at all in being in the company of a guru? In the physical company of a guru? Can I have a long distance guru? His answer was, the trees around a sandalwood tree in the forest start emitting the same fragrance. The trees around a sandalwood tree in a forest start emitting the same fragrance. That also answered my question. Does one need a guru? So, this is where it is. Everyone has to decide for themselves. Some people are immersed in their lineages, teachings, like let's say a devotee of Sri Aurobindo and the mother who's not met them, is very content and happy reading the books, visiting the samadhi. So that works for them. It's not a one size fits all. But I do feel for myself, and if someone was to ask me generally whether it is necessary or not, I would say it is. It helps tremendously. But it will happen if it is meant to happen. You see, the joke, Vasundhara, is, now again, my mother had this vision. She was also a regular housewife. She saw in her meditation herself lift up and out of the body and project itself on another human being and reflect light back to her. So she saw what happens with a guru-disciple relationship. It is one's own self. You think you are choosing someone to be your guru physically, but your own self has projected itself onto a form. In this case, it was her guru, and that guru is speaking back to her, back to the self, the highest truths, because we are in manifestation. This is a mechanism in manifestation. So who chooses the guru? It is an unconscious act. It happens at the subtle level. That is what happens. She has drawn this. So you truly can't choose a guru. It is a happening. If it is meant to happen, it will happen. The only trouble today, what seems to be happening, especially with the internet, is there's so much content out there that it can lead to confusion. I keep getting mails, you know, we listen to your teachings, but this guru says this, that guru says that. You can't cross-pollinate. The mind will go crazy. If you are rooted in one, and you like, we all like different aspects of different teachings. I am drawn to so many, especially Sufism, for example. That doesn't mean I don't read books on Sufism because I am a disciple of the lineage of Nisargadatta Maharaj Ramesh Balsekar. I enjoy it. But where did I find my peace? Here. That is where I found my peace. So it was clear to me. Same question was asked to Bhai Sahib, the Sufi master, Hindu Sufi master, Radha Mohan Lal Saxena of Kanpur. He had quite a foreign following. This he passed in 1966. He was a great master. He belonged to the Naqshbandi lineage. The Naqshbandis taught in silence without even the disciple knowing. Look at that grace. You don't even know you are being taught. Naqshbandi, the Naqshbandi silsila. So, a Russian lady was walking one day with him in the park. And she was a bit jealous of a French lady who had a long distance association with Bhai Sahib. Very advanced on the spiritual path. Super advanced. She had siddhis. She could see things, hear things. She was studying Tantra. And this lady was jealous. So she was walking with Bhai Sahib, and Bhai Sahib told her, "It's good you are next to me." She said, "What about so and so? She's always writing you letters, she's always telling this, she's always telling that. Will she get the same benefit that I get? Because I feel she's far more advanced on the path than I am." He said, Make no mistake, she is. But because it's a long distance relationship, she has the opportunity to become a perfect disciple. But those who come to me in my satsang have the opportunity to become masters. So why is that? Because a transmission happens at the level of consciousness. Why would we not cremate bodies of realized beings like Bhagwan, Shirdi Sai Baba, so and so? Because there's a vibration. The body has become the temple of the living God, to quote the Christian mystics. Bhagwan himself, when his Muslim devotee Mastan Swami passed away, actually drew out the map of Mastan Swami's samadhi, and all the rituals he took from a book and told his assistant, you have to do all this, go down there, do it, see it's done and come back. Why? Because at the subtle level, which we cannot see, when we are at the samadhi, whether it is Bhagwan's, any other samadhi, the grace of consciousness is so strong that even without you knowing it, it is emitting. So you may be as thick as a brick, or you may be very fine-tuned to vibrations, but the grace is so neutral, it is what blesses people. Physical form, in this case, there is no consciousness in terms of life form, pran shakti. Subtle form is there, physical presence.
One more of your words really helped me. My mother passed away last month.
Oh, so sorry
she
to hear that.
Terminally, like since 2-3, she was bedridden since 2-3 years. So really, like when she was gasping, she stays with my brother. She used to stay with my brother. So anything happens to mother, they'll call me. I went and nearby hospital is there. I took her. We gave oxygen, but her body tissue did not respond. After she passed away, like for few hours, I should have done that, I should have done this, this injection, this thought did not come to me. Like it was happening so much, I was feeling very restless. Then your words, no? What is destined to happen, will happen. Then I realized it is me, I should have given that injection. I should have kept that with me. I didn't do that. But those thoughts did not come to me at that moment.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yes. After that, it was peaceful.
You see, because that ego, I should have done that,
I was very restless for a few hours. Why I didn't do it? The thought did not come to me. Well, your words came, what is destined to happen, will happen.
I'm so glad. So you can avoid me as much as you like, but this is already within you. The teaching you can't avoid.
No, after that I should go and stay with you.
You can't avoid the teaching now. It's part of the bloodstream, as I say. It's not just my teaching. See, this lineage of Advaita Vedanta is all the same. Whether it is my lineage, whether it is Ramana Maharshi, whoever it is. It just comes out differently through different mouths based on our own conditioning and genetics and all that. But the fact that this is an example of an extreme situation, traumatic because of the loss of the mother, that the teaching does its job. You don't even have to remember the teaching. It comes and it cuts off the involvement. That look here, Yes, as a mechanism, maybe you could have taken that injection. As a mechanism, maybe you could have done that. But things happen at their destined time. You are not so great as an ego that you think you can control forces and factors which will allow people to die later or earlier. That is what happens.
Then I felt these words are so simple, but they are so real.
That is why Rameshji would say beauty in simplicity. Beauty in simplicity. But because it is so simple, it is deceptive. As the saying goes, the truth is simple. If it was complicated, everyone would get it. Because the mind loves complications. Truth is simple. Here today, gone tomorrow. Supposing you met someone whom you had an argument with or differing point of view, and a voice came in your head and said, look here, this person has 1 hour to live. Would you continue the argument with the person? Wouldn't you want the person to go in peace? That is our natural instinct is that of peace. But we forget it in this Maya. We lose that. Thank you for being part of this the last few days. It's been enriching. I hope you all have had a nice time here. The mountain is always there, the ashram is always there. I'll be back next year. Around January is the normal month of traveling. So, hope to see some of y'all back in January if all goes well. And I'd like to thank Sangeeta for coordinating with all of y'all this whole thing. Perhaps next time you might need a little help, Sangeeta. My favorite dialogue about this word thank you, which I've mentioned many times in my talks, is when at my mother's guru's satsang, a foreigner had come and at the end of the satsang told him thank you. And he replied that thanking me is like your left hand thanking your right hand. It even reminds me of my last book with Ramesh, The End of Duality, which is one of the last four talks we published before his passing, which he chose. So one day, while he had still not slipped into the altered state of transition or consciousness, I went with the typeset book and I said, we usually have acknowledgements, dedication. So whom should we thank this time? Because there's always support crew, you know, like someone has helped with this, someone has helped with that. And he said, for 30 books, I've thanked enough. Now who is left to thank? Thank who and for what, if all there is consciousness? That is one of my favorite books. It must be just 50 pages, I think. Because his talks were very brief, he could not speak much. So there were more gaps than talking. And that book reminded me of Nisargadatta Maharaj's, the book of his last talks, Consciousness and the Absolute. If anyone is into Nisargadatta Maharaj, again, that is a very slim book for the same reason. That in those final talks, there was very little talking. And as we all know, the fire burns brightest towards the end. That is my experience with Rameshji. And from what I heard of Nisargadatta Maharaj with his two translators, Ramesh Balsekar and Mularpata, the teachings were the strongest in the end. In fact, Maharaj would say, don't waste my time asking foolish questions. I don't have much time left. And it was befitting that the last book's title was The End of Duality. Someone asked Ramesh in the hospital, I had taken one man who was very argumentative in the satsangs. He was a lawyer, so that was his natural thing to argue. And he asked Ramesh, sir, are you coming back? And I was wondering what he's asking. Are you coming back where? Into the hospital? I was also quite silly, not realizing. He's saying, are you coming back to this plane, for example? And Ramesh replied, certainly not. Those memories, visiting him, I also remember when he was in the ICU. I said, Guruji, how do you feel in this ICU? You know, you see the sick people around. I said, are you getting bored? And his reply was three words. Witnessing is happening. And his last words to me, when just about after my first two books were published while he was alive, one or two people started calling me, can we meet you? And I would ask him what to do, because I have nothing to say except what you speak about. So he said, if anyone comes unasked, you must welcome them home, because that is meant to be. You are not the type, the personality to stick posters outside and do all that. You've been quiet for 9 years that I've known you, that's not going to change. But his last words were, remember that when anyone comes to you, they don't come to see a me. They don't come to see a me. Consciousness has drawn itself to itself.